It is good to see all of you who have decided to come out this morning to spend time in a study of the Word of God. I hope and pray that our study will be beneficial to you. I hope that you'll study along with me. These things are things that I've looked into the Word of God. Thank you, Chuck.
And have studied upon, and I believe they would be beneficial, and I hope that you'll study along with me to make sure that the things that I'm teaching will be in accordance with the will of God. And if you find that these things are in accord with the will of God, I pray that you will add them to your life and use them as a guidepost in the way that we are to live our lives. How many of us just sang that song? That's all right. Everybody, we all sing, right? What were we singing? Oh, to be like who? Christ. Oh, to be like thee. And did we really pay attention to the words of the song? I don't know if Ed planned this or not. I don't know if he looked at my notes and made a change or not, but it works out really well. But you look at it, it says, "Oh, to be like thee, blessed Redeemer, this is my constant longing and prayer. Gladly I'll forfeit all of earth's treasures, Jesus thy perfect likeness to wear. Oh, to be like thee, full of compassion, loving, forgiving, tender, and kind." We look at all these things and we see Christ described. And we sing this song saying, "Jesus, I want to be like you." Now, how many of us are like Christ? And all the things that we just sung and the mercy and the forgiveness and the gladly forfeiting all of earth's treasures, how many of us can honestly say we are like Christ? And yet we all try to be, right? None of us are. Not where we need to be. We all try to be. But what holds us back? What keeps us from being more like Christ? Well, that's what we're going to talk about this morning. When we look at the world around us, we see that there is a lack of morality. We look at the Bible and we see a certain code in how we are to live, a certain description in how the child of God is to be. And yet we look around in the world and we don't find this. And so this morning we want to begin talking about morality. And I'm not leaving the translation. It's just I don't want to wear you out on those. And these are some things that I think are necessary. And so we want to look at morality today. And then, Lord willing, next week we're going to look at morality as it applies to the way that we dress. And I know we talked about speech earlier in the year, but I'm going to be honest with you, with the things that I hear, I think we need to talk about it some more. And look at the way that we speak and how that affects our morality. And then we're going to look at drinking and drugs, and we're going to look at gambling again rather briefly. We did look at gambling earlier in the year, but these are all certain things that in the world, there's no problem with it. If you want a drink, just head downtown. You can find a drink. I imagine even it's legal on Sundays, I would imagine. I know in certain parts of Alabama, they made it illegal on Sundays. And at midnight, Saturday night, or Sunday morning, you couldn't buy anything until midnight Monday morning. And I was always like, what's the point? I mean, you stock up on Saturday, and you've got it to get you through on the Sunday. What's the point? Well, that's the Lord's Day. Well, every day is the Lord's. And really, as Christians, we need to quit this idea of Sunday go to meet and close attitude. And what I mean is, well, you've gotten certain clothes that you wear to church on Sunday, right? You go back in the old days and the old farmers, they would have one special pair of overalls, the brand new overalls, and a white shirt and a black tie oftentimes. And they'd wear that to church on Sunday with the suit coat. And that was their Sunday go to meeting clothes. And when those overalls began to fade out, began to look not quite so nice, that became their going to town clothes. And they went out and bought a brand new pair of overalls. And so there was this particular thing that they would wear to church on Sundays. And, well, we've left that far behind, haven't we? And I'm not saying that we have to have a particular outfit to wear to church and that's the only one that we wear. But the point I'm trying to make is people have this attitude in their spiritual lives. They've got this Sunday go-to-meeting attitude that they keep on Sunday. And then Monday through Saturday, it's business as usual. We walk like the world. We talk like the world. We laugh like the world. We act like the world. We sing like the world. Because the morality of this world is slowly beginning to wear upon us to the point that we look, act, dress just like them. And it's beginning to creep even into the Lord's church. And so we want to begin looking at morality. And let's begin by reading Romans chapter 12. Let's read Romans chapter 12 beginning there in verse 1. It says, the Apostle Paul writing to the Christians there in Rome, he says, therefore, I urge you, brethren, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies living a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. For through the grace given to me, I say to everyone among you not to think more highly of himself than he ought to think, but to think so as to have sound judgment, as God has allotted to each a measure of faith. For just as we have many members in one body, and all the members do not have the same function, so we who are many are one body in Christ, and individually members one of another. Now I want to look at these verses, and let's think about these things for just a moment. Let's go back and look at verses 1 through 3, 1 and 2, and note there that we are to present our bodies a what? A living and holy sacrifice. We've been talking about sacrifices in our Sunday morning Bible study, haven't we? And they're kind of gross. You take the fat off of this, and you take the fat off of that, and you offer these certain things up, and then you take the rest and you burn it outside the camp, and then you take the other and you take certain sections of meat, and that's what the Aaron and Moses and his sons were to eat, and they were to offer the other and burn it all up, and this was to be a sweet-smelling aroma. And you know, they were to do these things morning and evening. They were to offer the incense morning and evening, just every day. That's what the priests were to do. Well, who's the priest of the church today? Is it some special class of people? Yep. All those who are following after Jesus Christ are priests. All those that are living in accordance with His will, that have obeyed His gospel, they are priests. And Paul tells us that we are to give our lives as a living and holy sacrifice acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be what? Do not be conformed to this world. What does it mean to conform? You know, it's kind of funny, you look at the youth today and they talk about they don't want to conform to this world, and so they have the big holes in their ears and they get the tattoos and they put the piercings up here and over here and on their ears, and just everywhere that they can find an extra little piece of skin, they'll throw a piercing on that, and they walk around in these big bulky clothes that they look like they went out and raided their grandfather's closet and got the biggest thing they could find and wrap it around them, and they don't want to look like the world. They don't want to conform. But yet they all look just alike, don't they? Every single one of them, you look at them, they're all the same. They're conforming to themselves. They call themselves nonconformist. And yet they're conforming to the idea of nonconformity. Think about that one for just a moment. And you see, as Christians, we are not to be conformed to this world. That is, we're not to be like the world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. We're to be transformed. We're not to follow after the things of this world. We're to follow after God. Now, just think about that for just a moment as we look at these things and keep these thoughts in mind. Not being conformed to this world, but being transformed. Offering up our lives as a spiritual sacrifice. What does a sacrifice mean? We give up something, right? When they offered the sacrifice in the Old Testament, they had to give up the best of the bulls. The best, one without spot or without any blemish. They had to give up the best of the rams, the best of the sheep. They had to choose the ones that really were the ones that they'd want to keep for themselves, or that they could get the best price for at the market. They sacrifice that to God. They gave up something. And so when we look at these things, we need to understand that we need to be willing to give up what we want and live our lives as a living sacrifice to God. This nation at one time had fairly decent morals. But it is quickly following the many heathen nations that have gone before. You look at the downfall of the Roman Empire, much of it comes to the falling of the morality of the Roman Empire. and all the things that began to just wear. And it wasn't the barbarians in the north that killed the Roman Empire. It was the problems within. And let me tell you something, folks. We have this war on terror, and I believe in fighting against those that want to come in and to terrorize our country. I believe fully in that. But I'm not so afraid of the terrorist as I am the decay that is taking place within America. The lack of morals, and you look at, we've got an election coming up, and you're looking at all these, and you're going to be, many people will be looking at it, and they'll be going, okay, well, let's see, which one's going to tax me? Which one's going to give me free health care? Which one's going to do this for me? And very few are going to look and go, which one has good morals? Which one is going to enact laws that will help us out as a nation to be a better moral nation? I had a guy who later became a brother in the Lord, but at the time he said, you can't legislate morality. I'm like, wait a second, they've been doing that since the beginning of time. Thou shalt not murder. Well, we got that in the books, don't we? Ken, you can't just walk up to somebody and pop them in the head right there in front of a cop and go, ha ha ha, you can't legislate morality. This is a moral thing. Therefore, you can't prosecute me. What would you do? You'd arrest them, right? Right there on the spot. And you have all those witnesses, you get their names, and that trial should go pretty quick with all the witnesses that are there. Unfortunately, more than likely, it'd drag on about 3 or 4 years and things of that nature, and he'd probably get off on some technicality. Not on Ken's part, because he'd do everything just right. But they're trying to say, you can't legislate morality. Folks, we need to legislate morality. We need to. Or we will fall, just like all the others. The morals of our day are very lax, to say the least. And all that is necessary to be aware of this is just open your eyes, turn on your television, drive downtown, go to the local mall, walk around any city in this world, and you will see a lack of morals. And so what is the reason for what we are seeing today? Why are things the way that they are? And the thing that we need to understand is that sin is not looked upon as sin anymore. Oh, don't call it sin. No, 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 that's negative. We don't want to be negative. Let's change the way people look at it. Abortion. Let's not call it abortion. They're not killing a baby, folks. That's not what they're killing. We don't want to call it that. They're killing, that they're removing a mass of tissue from the woman. It's just a mass of tissue. It's just a lump that's there that has begun to grow. It's a cancer. If it continues to grow, it's going to have a horrible effect on her life. Therefore, let's just get rid of it. Let's remove it. Abortion's not abortion. It's not killing. It's not murder. But yet, if you kill a woman who's pregnant, even if it's at an age where that baby could be legally aborted, you're still going to get charged for 2 murders. And that one just really doesn't exactly square up with me. And if you kill the egg of a certain endangered species, that egg, they understand that's the future of that species, and you can go to prison for that. But humans aren't endangered. We are overpopulating the earth. We're destroying the earth. Therefore, human life is not that important. But abortion, when you look back in the 40s and the 50s, and people like to look back at that and go, well, it was an idyllic time and things were better. And in some ways it was. I wouldn't want to go back because cars are nicer now, and I like my microwave, I like my TV, I like my movies, my DVD players, and I sure don't want to go back to a time before computers. Even though I do like manual typewriters, I don't want to have to work on them all the time. I like the things of this world, but the morals were better. You go back and watch Nick at Night. Anybody watch Nick at Night? You ever catch the old Ozzie and Harriet show? Anna loves to watch Bonanza, and I won't tell you which one it is on there that she likes to watch, but she likes to watch Bonanza. And yeah, you'll have a little bit of alcohol over here, and occasionally Hoss will go out and get drunk, but for the most part, it's kind of frowned on. It's kept in the background. Andy Griffith, yeah, he'll light up a cigarette every once in a while, and he was a single parent, but he was a widower. And you know, they're even using Andy Griffiths in some churches to teach Bible lessons. They have an Andy Griffith workbook where you sit down and you watch a particular Andy Griffith show and you study and you look at biblical principles. And folks, this came from a Church of Christ in Huntsville, Alabama. And you can buy the book. You can watch the shows and learn all these moral lessons. And there's a reason why they chose a show like Andy Griffith. Because if you choose a show like Survivor, any morality on Survivor? Richard Hatch, one of the first ones, what was he known for? Nudity, among other things. You look at any of these shows that you have on TV today, you're not going to find one that doesn't have some kind of... I like Home Improvement. But there were some moral problems there on Home Improvement. You look at all these shows that are available today, and there's a great difference than there was in that day and time. You look at the cities as they are today. What do we have downtown? My father and my father-in-law, when they came in, they thought, well, y'all have a lot of good places to eat. All these cafes all over the place. I warned Jerry Jacobs. I said, look, if you decide that you want to go out, don't stop in a cafe thinking you're going to get just a cup of coffee, because you're going to get a cup of coffee and you're going to be surrounded by slot machines. They're everywhere, aren't they? You go up into Weirton and, oh man, we drove back from the back way from the airport when we were taking my in-laws in, and it's like 50 to 100 that we passed in just a small little stretch. Cafes are everywhere. Drinking and gambling, prostitution, things that you didn't really see that much. They weren't, Nevada, you had to go to Nevada to gamble. Now you just go downtown anywhere in West Virginia. In Tennessee, you go to Memphis, you go to the river, there you go, there's the boats. Oh wait, you don't even have to go there. You go to any gas station, anywhere, in almost any state, there's what, I think two left that don't have a lottery. There's gambling in any gas station in the United States of America except for in two states. Do you see how the morality of this world is beginning to affect us as Christians? You go to most religious institutions and you can gamble. Do you know that? Raffles, bingo, it's all gambling. And it begins to wear and it begins to affect us because sin is not looked upon as sin anymore. Drinking and gambling is no longer a sin, it's a disease. Alcoholism. I have a question for those that believe these things are sin, that believe these things are a disease rather than sin. And I don't deny that there might be a disposition for it. But if they never take that first drink, are they an alcoholic? Even though they might have a gene in them that makes them disposed to be more susceptible to the alcohol, if they never take the first drink, would we think them an alcoholic? Would we treat them for alcoholism if they've never drank alcohol? No. Gambling. If they never go out and play poker, if they never play the slot machines, if they never do any of that, would they have a gambling problem? No. But you look at the way that it's looked at, and you can't just fire a person because he's losing all of his money to gambling. You have to treat that person for gambling. And someone who has a drug problem and has an alcohol problem, you can't just fire him and say, I don't allow your kind here. You've got to send him to a treatment center and have him treated because it's a disease. And I'm not against treating alcoholics. I'm not against treating gamblers and things of that nature. But we need to look at it as what it is. It's a transgression of God's law. It's sin. You see, there has been a general relaxing of attitudes toward morality. Do you know, back as far as 1970, folks, that's 38 years. I know that because I'm 30. Oh, that's 37 years. I can't even remember my own age. It's a sign of getting old. Watch out when you hit your 30s. It starts going fast. Just over 30 years ago, the Lutheran Church stated that they would allow Lutherans to look favorably on the development of a sexual relationship between a married person and someone other than his marriage partner. They would look favorably upon adultery. You can go back and look it up. 1970, Louisville Courier Journal. They would look favorably upon adultery. Joseph Fletcher, a renowned professor of social ethics, said every man must decide for himself what is right. Any act, even lying, premarital sex, abortion, adultery, and murder, could be right depending upon the circumstances. So in other words, if the circumstances are right, I could don a gas mask, I could set off canisters in this place, kill every single one of you. Well, in my eyes, it's not such a bad thing. Situation ethics have taken over the world. And sadly, this is the way that most religions look at morality today, that it's a choice, and that the Bible, well, it's more kind of a guidebook, a general guidebook. We look at major things, but the rest of it, well, it's old. It's 2,000 years old, and it doesn't really fit in with society today. It doesn't really fit in with all the things that are going on today. Therefore, we can kind of throw it out, and we just kind of look, and it's what I think. It's what I feel is right. I mean, how many times have you talked to somebody and go, well, I just feel that it's okay? Let me tell you, there was a sister in Christ. Was. She's not anymore. She didn't die physically. But there was a sister in Christ. She sent letters to numbers of preachers trying to find someone who would justify her leaving a loveless marriage so that she could go off and marry someone else because he wouldn't cheat on her. As far as I know, she never got that letter. If she'd have written enough people, she could have found someone that would have allowed her. But she left him anyway. She went off and she lived with a married man, tried to marry him, and he decided she wasn't worth having, and now she's just with pretty much anybody who will have her. You see the state of even the church today, trying to rewrite what the Bible has already set forth. The idea of trying to change, well, it's just such a bad situation. He doesn't love me. He doesn't give me any attention. He doesn't give me the things that I want. Therefore, I want to leave him and find someone else. Now, would there have been anything wrong with her leaving him? Well, she would have committed the sin of divorce, but she could have received forgiveness for that. But she would have never had a right to marry another one. That's another one we're going to look at in the future, is this idea of divorce and remarriage and the way that the world looks at it and the way that the Bible looks at it. Certainly this nation and society was not perfect. But sin was not glorified. It was not glamorized. You look, more people know about Paris Hilton and her pornography and her TV shows and all the things of her life than they know about the Bible. You go out and you ask young people, who do you look up to? Britney Spears. I like Britney Spears. Look at her now. Drug addict, alcoholic, worst mother in America. But I want to be like Britney Spears. Ashley Simpson. You look at them all. You look at the way that they're living and the things that they're doing. These are the ones that we want to be like. Angelina Jolie, oh, she's just awesome. She's great. She's caring. She's a wonderful mother. Yeah, she lived with Brad Pitt. Well, she's still living. They hadn't even got married yet, have they? And that's not counting all the other marriages that she's already been in and the illicit relationships that she's been in and the things that she's done at the movie screen for all the world to see. Let's get off the women. How about Harrison Ford? Well, I like Calista Flockhart, so I'm going to divorce my wife, and I'm going to go marry her. My wife hasn't done anything to me. I just don't like her anymore. I'm going to go marry this person. Wait, that's Indiana Jones. That's Han Solo. He's great. He's wonderful. Tom Cruise. Tom Arnold. You just go through. Older generation, Elizabeth Taylor. How many times was she married? I think she went, what, her seventh time? Eighth? And it's glorified. Look at these. Try to be like these. Emulate them in your life. Folks, we need to understand that just as Christians are not to remain static, we are to go on and to continue to try to become better as we allow God's Word to work within our lives. We try to improve ourselves. We need to understand that sinners become worse and worse. They start out here and I had a gospel preacher tell me he did not believe in the slippery slope of sin. Didn't believe in it. Look with me, if you would, in 2 Corinthians 3 and verse 13. I wish I had thought of this when I was talking to him, but I was already a little too flustered with all the other things that he had said and accusations he had made, and I was doing good to bite my tongue. 2 Corinthians chapter 3, verse 13. Evil men and imposters will proceed from what? from bad to worse, deceiving and being deceived. It's not going to get better, folks. It's going to get worse. They're not going to improve. They're going to get worse. They're going to take whatever they're doing now, they're going to take it the next step. You remember Jerry Jacobs was talking about the homosexual marriages and things of that nature, and how if we allow that, then they're going to be wanting to marry animals. Fox News just had a report that a person said that by 2015, people will be desiring to marry robots. Robots! It's a lot easier to get them to say, I do, I guess. And that's what a lot of men want. They want someone that they can say, you do this, and they go and do it. That's not the kind of submission that Brother Jared Jacobs was talking about Wednesday evening, is it? No. They're going to progress worse and worse. Abortion? Well, they've already tried to progress from that to euthanasia, haven't they? Well, they're old. Their life is beyond any use. Let's kill them. Let's just put them to death. What was it? There was a movie not too long ago. Nathan, you might can think of it. There was a movie back in, it was probably the 70s or the 80s, somewhere in there. And when you reached, I think it was the age of 30 or 35, you had this crystal in your hand, and that crystal would change. And when that crystal changed, you die. They come and they find you, they kill you, because you're no longer a useful part of society. You've grown old, you're starting to wear down, and I'll agree with them on that. You hit 35 and the body starts to deteriorate. I got a long ways to go, but it's already started. You see, and that was presented in a movie, and now you're already beginning to get that way. Let's just get rid of them. Obviously, then we need to understand that we cannot determine morality by looking at the world, by the standards that are set by men. And so that brings us to the question, how then do we determine morality? What is morality? What is it? How do we determine what is right and what is wrong? Well, let's look at a couple of man-made definitions. Ernest Hemingway. He said, what is moral is what you feel good after, and what is immoral is what you feel bad after. Huh. That's pretty nice. I feel really good after eating a big, huge meal. And if my stomach would let me, I'd feel really good eating another one. But you get into that moral of gluttony there pretty quick, don't you? What is good is what you feel good after, and what is immoral is what you feel bad after. Situation ethics, folks. That's exactly what that is. Well, I feel good after I take that needle filled up with heroin and shoot it into my veins. That I feel really good after that. I feel really good after I take that shot of whiskey and pour it. It kind of burns a little bit on the way down, but you feel good afterwards. Therefore, that's not immoral. Can't be. I feel good after I go out and spend a night with however how many women I can find. I feel good. I'm a man. I'm virile. That can't be wrong then. That's the way Ernest Hemingway thought of it. Let's look at Webster's. Webster's defines it as of or relating to principles of right and wrong in behavior, ethical, expressing or teaching a conception of right behavior, conforming to a standard of right behavior sanctioned by or operative on one's conscious or ethical judgment. That sounds a little bit better, but it's still setting up with the idea of what people think is right and wrong. Principles of right and wrong behavior, right behavior. Nothing is in there about what God approves, is there? And so we need to ask ourselves, should we use these definitions in determining morality? Should that be our standard, what Ernest Hemingway said? If it isn't, let's all go home. Let's go find what we want to do, what we enjoy doing, and sit there and do that and feel good about it. I won't tell you how you'll feel throughout all eternity until the end of the lesson, but you won't feel all that great if you go out and do what you want to do and solely what you want to do. I believe the Bible sets forth a good definition of morality. And so if you would turn with me to 2 Samuel chapter 13. And we're going to take some time, we're going to look at this and look at some principles that we can find from that. And then, Lord willing, this evening we'll make some application into our lives today. 2 Samuel chapter 13, let's begin reading there in verse 1. And to set the stage, you've got these are the children of David that it's talking about here. His children by a couple of wives. They weren't full-blooded brother and sister. They were half-brother, half-sister. Some of them were brother and sister full-blooded. But let's look there. 2 Samuel chapter 13, verse 1. Now it was after this that Absalom, the son of David, had a beautiful sister whose name was Tamar. And Amnon, the son of David, loved her. Now there's the main three characters here. Absalom, son of David. Tamar, his sister, full-blooded sister, same mother, same father. And Amnon, same father, different mother. So Amnon and Tamar are half-brother, half-sister. Okay? And Amnon, the son of David, loved Tamar. Amnon was so frustrated because of his sister Tamar that he made himself ill, for she was a virgin. And it seemed hard to Amnon to do anything to her. And that's already turning off pretty bad there, isn't it? But Amnon had a friend whose name was Jonadab, the son of Shimeah, David's brother. So, it's his cousin. And Jonadab was a very shrewd man. He's able to reason and think things through and figure out a way to get anything done. He said to him, "O son of the king, why are you so depressed, morning after morning? Will you not tell me?" Then Amnon said to him, "I am in love with Tamar, the sister of my brother Absalom." Jonadab then said to him, "Lie down on your bed and pretend to be ill. When your father comes to see you, say to him, 'Please, let my sister Tamar come and give me some food to eat, and let her prepare the food in my sight, that I may see it and eat from her hand.'" So Amnon lay down and pretended to be ill. And when the king came to see him, Amnon said to the king, "Please, let my sister Tamar come and make me a couple of cakes in my sight, that I may eat from her hand." Then David sent to the house for Tamar, saying, "Go now to your brother Amnon's house and prepare food for him." So Tamar went to her brother Amnon's house, and he was lying down, and she took dough, kneaded it, made cakes in his sight, and baked the cakes. She took the pan and dished them out before him, but he refused to eat. And Amnon said, Have everyone go out from me. So everyone went out from him. It's looking really bad for Tamar, doesn't it? I don't want any witnesses. I don't want anybody around. This is not something that she wants to happen. Then Amnon said to Tamar, "Bring the food into the bedroom that I may eat from your hand." So Tamar, she still thinks she's doing a good thing. She still thinks that she's helping her sick brother by bringing him something to eat at his bedside because he's too ill to get up and he loves her so much. She's his favorite sister. So I'm going to go and I'm going to do this. So Tamar took the cakes which she had made and brought them into the bedroom to her brother Amnon. When she brought them to him to eat, he took hold of her and said to her, "Come, lie with me, my sister." Now let's pay attention to the words that Tamar says. This is where we're going to see our definitions of morality according to the Scriptures. But she answered him, "No, my brother, do not violate me, for such a thing is not done in Israel. Do not do this disgraceful thing. As for me, where could I get rid of my reproach? And as for you, you will be like one of the fools in Israel. Now, therefore, please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." And you can go on and you can finish reading and you can see where Tamar was raped by her half-brother and Absalom, being her full-brother, exacted revenge later. A rather severe revenge for which he fled for his life, but he was going to protect the honor of his sister. And you note there at the end, she says, "Please speak to the king, for he will not withhold me from you." In other words, if you speak to the king, he'll give me to you for your wife. Now, when we look at these things, we can see that morality is defined as by the Scriptures. There in verses 12 and 13, we see God's definition of morality. Note the first thing she says. She says, "For such a thing is not done in Israel." Amnon, nobody in Israel does something like this. This is wicked. This is not something anybody of the Israelites would do. It's improper, even in Israel. We can learn in Leviticus chapter 18, there in verse 9, that the Lord commanded that the nakedness of your sister, either your father's daughter or your mother's daughter, whether born at home or born outside, their nakedness you shall not uncover. So, all right, they both have David as their father, but they've got different mothers, so they're covered in both of those, aren't they? Don't care if it's born to a different mother than yours. You're still not to uncover. Now, that means that David, if he was going to allow this, was going to allow something that shouldn't have happened. And we can really see that what was happening here was even worse than that. But here we can see that there was the law. It is against God. These things ought not be done in Israel. It's against God. Folks, we need to understand that there are some things that ought not be done. But they're legal in the United States of America. Well, if the government says it's okay, then the government's above God. Therefore, if the government says it's okay, I can do it. No. We need to understand, we need to comprehend that there are some things that should not be done. We must understand that yes, there are absolutes. There is black, there is white. There is right, there is wrong. It's not just gray. And that's the way the world wants to look. It's all gray. It's all in the middle somewhere. You know, this isn't clearly defined, therefore we can do it. We need to understand that there is a standard of behavior. This thing should not be done, Tamar says. She says further, as for me, where could I get rid of my reproach? Not only are you sinning against God, Amnon, but this was against another human being. A human being made in the image of God. You go back and look in Genesis chapter 1, there verses 26 and 27. What does it say? Then God said, let us make man in our image according to our likeness. So He created man in His own image. In the image of God, He created him, male and female. That means the men and the women are both created in the image of God. Women aren't some inferior creature, folks, to be treated however we want to treat them. They're created in the image of God just like we are. They have a soul just like we do. They have a spiritual side just like we do. Tamar says, how am I going to get rid of my reproach? In other words, now, let me ask you a question. Has Tamar done anything wrong? She did what her father, the king, told her to do. You go and you make some cakes for your brother there in his sight. She was taking care of a sick brother. Now, where did her reproach come from? Where did it come from? Where am I going to make my reproach go? How am I going to get rid of my reproach? My sin. Even though she didn't ask for it, she was just pretty. Let's understand that. She was just beautiful and her stepbrother loved her. Doesn't say anything about her bathing naked on the rooftop like Bathsheba did with David. Doesn't say anything about that. She didn't ask for any of it. Doesn't say anything about her parading around like Herodias did there before Herod so that she could entice Herod so that she could get the head of John the Baptist because her mother had wanted it. Doesn't say anything about that. She was just a good person, just going and doing a good thing. But this man raped her. Where am I going to cause my reproach to go? How will I get rid of my reproach? In Matthew chapter 25, there in verse 40, the king will answer and say to them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did it to one of these brothers of mine, even the least of them, you did it to me. Once again, we're made in the image of God. However we are treated, that is how people are treated. However we treat others. If we do something good, we're doing it to the Lord. If we do something bad, He will answer them, truly I say to you, to the extent that you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. So you see, how we treat others. Where will I go and get rid of my reproach? This is a sin against another human being. How we treat our brethren shows exactly how we would treat Christ. We need to be careful as to how we treat one another, how we live towards one another. Because however I treat Nathan or Dan or Brother Harold or anybody here, how I treat them, I'm treating Christ. Maybe we need to lay off Dan a little bit. Quit telling those short jokes. You understand? Do you understand the morality? It's not just a sin against God, but it's a sin against another human being. In 1 Corinthians chapter 8, there in verse 12, the Apostle Paul says, and so by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Consideration must be given to others, not just to ourselves. And note, once again, as we go back to 2 Samuel chapter 13, and we see Tamar, she says, "And as for you, you will be like one of the fools in Israel." So he sinned against God. He sinned against Tamar. He's caused reproach to come upon her. And now he's sinning against himself. In 1 Corinthians chapter 6, there in verse 18, the Apostle Paul says quite clearly, "Flee immorality." Wait. What's that? That says moral there, doesn't it? No, we can't legislate morals. We don't know what morals are. Morals are, it's our own opinion as to what's right and wrong. Well, if that's the case, then the Apostle Paul is telling us to flee from what we don't know what it is. If you don't know what moral is, you don't know what immoral is, do you? If you don't have a clear standard of morality, you can't have a clear standard of immorality. If you don't know what morality is, you don't know what to run away from. That's like saying, run away from cats. Well, there's some cats that are good. You go up there and pet the cat if you can get it to come up to you. He's a little skittish, but you go up there and you pet the cat. He's not going to hurt you. He might hurt you if you try to quit petting him. He's not going to hurt you. But let's say a panther come up here. What do you want your kids to do? Run. Flee. You need to know what's what. House cat's okay, except for Nathan's. House cat's okay. Other cats, not so good. Lions, run away. Clark, go pet him. He might sneeze a little bit, but he's not going to hurt you. Morals, keep them. Immorality, flee. Every other sin that a man commits is outside the body, but the immoral man sins against his own body. Now, we're going to look at this passage of Scripture later on in a whole different light, but let's keep that in mind. And so we can see here that he had sinned against God. These things ought not be done in Israel. Where can I cause my reproach to go? He had sinned against Tamar. And you're going to be like one of the fools in Israel. Sinned against himself. C.S. Lewis used the analogy of a fleet of ships or an orchestra to illustrate these principles. For a fleet of ships to operate correctly, they all got to be headed to the same port, don't they? Let's say you've got a fleet of ships out in the Pacific. Let's go back to World War II. There was a lot of fleets of ships in the Pacific at that day and time. Let's say there's a fleet of ships. They're there surrounding the aircraft carrier and everything, and they're protecting it. Now, if the aircraft carrier and a couple of the destroyers are heading to Honolulu, and the other ones are heading to Los Angeles, are they all going the same direction? What's going to happen? Let's say they're cruising along. Everything's going great. They're all in perfect formation. And they get their communication lines mixed. Some think they're going to Los Angeles. Some think they're going to Honolulu. You're going to have a few boats in the bottom of the ocean, aren't you? Especially those destroyers or some of the smaller boats that run into that aircraft carrier. What if a conductor was to stand before an orchestra? Let's say you go and you go to Pittsburgh and you go to the Benedum Theater and they've got this this wonderful orchestra up here. It's just they had the Lord of the Rings orchestra there, and I wanted to go and see it really, really bad. And Howard Shore was going to be there directing. And let's say Howard Shore directed one time with this. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. I can't do them both at the same time. But over here, 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2. That's not going to work, is it? I say I was up here leading singing. I say, you guys over here sing number 785, and you guys over here, I'd have to have a new songbook, I know. There's one out there that has 1,000. And you guys over here, you sing number 5. Are we going to sing in unison? Let's say one's in 6/8 time, one's in 4/4 time. We're going to run together? No. See, we've all got to be heading in the same direction. We've all got to be going towards a common goal. We must be kept in a proper relationship, or else we will crash into one another. Each must be in good sailing condition. All those boats have to be in good working condition so they can keep up with one another, so they can keep that proper form. Their radios and everything have to be running just perfectly together. C.S. Lewis, in his book Mere Christianity, he has this quote. It says, "Morality then seems to be concerned with three things: fair play and harmony between individuals, harmonizing the things inside each individual, and the general purpose of human life as a whole, what man was made for." Now that's biblical principles right there, isn't it? Where can I cause my reproach to go? Amnon, you've sinned against me. You're going to be like one of the fools. You've sinned against yourself. And what is the general purpose of human life as a whole? Fear God, keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. That's the whole responsibility that we have. Sin against God. We're going to look, Lord willing, this evening at some more things. We're going to look at our relationship to morality. We want to look at these things because it's very important. This is to set the stage for the lesson we're going to look at next week. We're going to look at dress. Because we need to. I was walking in Robinson Township Mall one day, and you think I'm talking about a girl. I'm not. This guy came walking by and he said, "I blank for food," on his shirt. It wasn't scribbled up, wasn't the little asterisks like you have in comic strips. It had those letters. Boom, 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 for food. Now that kind of falls in several categories, but our dress. Had a fellow show up at my house. Because of the situation, I let him remain because the kids weren't up. But I'd have never let him walk through the front door of my house again wearing the shirt that he had on. How we dress shows what kind of morals we have. How we talk shows what kind of a person we are. Turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Let's turn over to Matthew chapter 5. Let's begin reading there in verse 13. Look at what Jesus has to say here. Matthew chapter 5, there beginning in verse 13. He's there, Sermon on the Mount. He's giving them these teachings. He's just gone through the Beatitudes, all these things, happy or blessed is this. And verse 13, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It's worthless." You can't make salt that's gone bad good again, can you? "It is no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men." Do you see what he's saying there? You are the salt of the earth. You are the seasoning of the earth. If you're not seasoning the earth as you should anymore, I'm going to throw you out. Did you catch that? He's talking to us. If we are not being the influence on the world, the preservation of the world, isn't that what salt was for? You'd rub it into the meat and the meat would last longer. If you're not preserving the world, I'm throwing you out. You're going to be trampled under the foot of men. "You are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden. Nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house." How we dress, how we talk, the places we go, the things we do, the TV shows we watch, the music we listen to. Everything affects our immortal soul. And we are either a good influence on the world or we're to be thrown out. Now, go back to Romans chapter 12. And let's put these two verses together. Romans chapter 12. "I urge you, please, brethren," is what he's saying. "Listen to me. Pay close attention. I urge you, I beg of you, by the mercies of God, to present your bodies a living and holy sacrifice, acceptable to God, which is your spiritual service of worship. And do not be conformed to this world." You Christians in Rome, you Christians in Wellsburg, I beg of you, don't be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind, so that you may prove what the will of God is, that which is good and acceptable and perfect. Used to be, there was the attire of a harlot. The Scriptures talk about the attire of a harlot. And it used to be you'd see someone and you go, that's a hooker. That's a prostitute. It's a lady of the night. You judge her by what she's wearing, but now that's what cheerleaders wear, isn't it? I don't watch a lot of football, but Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders, they're pretty risque in their outfits. It used to be men were judged by how they dressed. Well, there's a man of good, strong moral character. You can tell by he's dressed nicely and his clothes are in an orderly fashion, but nowadays it's let's untuck the shirt, let's hang the pants down about right here, and walk around holding them the whole time. We're judged by how we dress. We're judged by what we say. It used to be, that person talks like a sailor. Nowadays, sailors blush at what the kids say in school. At what's on the Cartoon Network. What? That's a cartoon? It's not Bugs Bunny anymore, folks. Worst thing in Bugs Bunny was cross-dressing. It's gone so much further. Morals have gone down. And Jesus said, you are the light of the world. In other words, they should be able to look at us and go, there is the way God wants me to be. And so let's all go home and look in our closets. Let's listen to what we're saying. Listen to what we're doing. Watch ourselves. And if we find that in any way we are dressing more like the world, talking more like the world, acting more like the world, then let's be careful, because Jesus said, I'm going to throw you out and be trampled under the foot of men. It's that simple. You're either morally right with God or you're morally bankrupt with the world. And yes, it's hard to give up certain things, certain words that I'm not going to lie to you, folks. I had a potty mouth. I opened up the back door of Long John Silver's one day and I said something right in front of my brother I wish I'd have never said. But I said it. But you know what? I hadn't said it again. I said it some after that, but not since I made things right with God again and set my life back on the right path. But you know what? There's still some words that they'll creep out of my mouth that most of the world don't look at as cuss words, but they are. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. They're wrong. So I hope that you'll come back and join us this evening as we study this lesson further. I hope that you'll come back and join us next week as we look at some things in the weeks to follow. Because we must be different. If we act like the world, talk like the world, dress like the world, live like the world, we're going to be with the world in the everlasting fires of punishment. It's plain and simple. Folks, I'm talking to you. And yet so many are so... that I don't care. You will. On the day of judgment, you'll be judged for the things you say, for the things you wear, for the way that you lived. And you're going to go back and you go, He told me. And Mom and Daddy, they tried to tell me, but I wouldn't listen to them either. I snuck things out that I shouldn't have been wearing. I said things when I wasn't around them. Because, well, who would know? God knows. So the invitation of Jesus Christ, not my invitation, not the Wellsburg Church of Christ invitation, but the invitation of Jesus Christ is here for each and every one of us. If you've never obeyed the gospel of Jesus Christ, then there's a really simple thing to do. Do you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God? If you do, come forward, confess that belief, repent of those sins. And those things, when you go down into the waters of baptism, having confessed your belief in Jesus Christ, they're washed away. Brother Jared talked about that, didn't he? At the point of baptism, they're removed. Everything you've ever said, everything you've ever worn, every improper thing you've done in your life is gone. Washed away. God won't hold that against you anymore. But perhaps you've obeyed the gospel, but you haven't continued to be the light. Oh, you've got that little Christian light of yours, but instead of hiding under a bushel, no, you're... Oh, wait, there's my friends. I got to talk a little different when I'm around them. I don't want to look weird. And you hide it. Now I'm going to keep my salt to myself. I'm not going to let the rest of the world know. Jesus says, I'm going to throw you out to be trampled under the foot of men. You're going to face everlasting punishment. If you've spoken in a way that is improper, if you've dressed in a way that is not pleasing to God, if you've lived your life, done things that you should not have been doing, that you haven't sought forgiveness for, today is the day
The book of Hebrews says, today is the day of salvation. Do not harden your hearts as they did in the days of the rebellion. Whatever it is in your life that needs to be corrected, now's the time as we stand and as we sing.